Hey guys, sorry that I was running behind for today's recording. And you know that I said that I was in the bathroom, but really, there's a new trailer for That 90s Show dropped.
And,
I heard it had some exclusive footage that had a few frames, but still some exclusive footage that hadn't been seen before. Yeah, and so I just, you know, I had to prioritize it because I got to get some reactions.
Did they have the scene where Fez gets pogs?
No, Fez is a hairstylist now.
Okay.
And he runs a hair cutting place. Okay. So that's kind of
and he gives them
deal.
All to Rachel?
Yeah. I bet there's a lot of conversation about the Rachel. The two old dogs from the last one, they're back, and the dad is not happy about all these teens running around.
Oh, I bet.
If you're worried about if they're the kids of them, they are. Yeah. No problems there. They are the kids of them.
Kurtwood couldn't just skate by on the residuals from RoboCop.
I was going to say, I always hoped that would be the ending, that they'll do the 90s show. Gradually, he'll become a nemesis of a new modern cop who is part man, part robot. And at the end, he will be exploded by the front of a truck.
But it looks good. I mean,
sure, man.
We're excited for this one.
Cool.
Fingers on the pulse.
Yeah, man. Gonna be cool. Gonna be cool.
Weird intro, I would say, to the besties is just in sort of street team viral marketing for That 90s Show.
Yeah, we're not even paid for that.
Yet.
Really kicking off some dust.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game. I was about to say of the week. That's not accurate. Best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I am a super soldier clone made up from the soldier genomes using the 20th century analog cloning and the super baby method. Les enfants terribles.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and thanks to having access to your podcast feed, I know that you also like beep, 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 boop, beep, beep. Giant Bomb.
My name is Russ Frushick, and I know the best game of the battlefield.
Oh, my gosh. Welcome, everyone, to the Besties, where we talk usually about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. But this week in our video game club that you have joined just by listening, we're going to begin a journey through the Metal Gear Solid franchise. All the way back, we're going to take you all the way back to, I guess, by my math, this year will mark the 25th anniversary of Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, look at that. We got a news peg.
There's our news peg right there. Yeah. I found it.
I mean, Metal Gear did exist before Metal Gear. So if we did want to go back to the roots
of it. We don't.
Okay, good.
Yes, we don't.
We're just talking about Metal Gear Solid games.
Talking about Metal Gear Solid
games. That's how it all starts.
Don't think about it. How many Metal Gear Solid games are there in your all's view?
Okay. Yeah, but are we counting?
Again,
oh, we're not
are we counting Metal Gear 1 and 2?
I said don't think about it. Okay. You know what I mean? How many Metal Gear Solid
17.
Games? Seven games.
I said 17.
17. Okay, that's wild.
Are we counting Metal Gear Rising Revengeance?
Sure, yeah. Count Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Are we counting Portable Ops?
Sure, yeah. Just looking for an estimate, gut check.
I think it's more than that. I think it's probably closer to 20.
I think it's 23.
Huh. Well, I don't know.
That's just a guess.
Wait, Justin, do you not know the answer to this?
No, I'm just interested to see what you guys thought.
Jesus Christ.
Write in and tell us how many games there are.
Yeah, write in how many you think. Okay, count real quick. Okay?
It's 23.
Is
it 23?
Yeah, yeah, I'm on the Wikipedia page.
And there's seven main ones.
Yeah.
Metal Gear 2, Metal Gear Solid, and then those five.
I feel like Ghost Babel should be a main one.
You can feel however you want. I feel like VR Mission should be shot into the sun.
I wasn't saying
yeah, it
VR
also
VR
gets
VR.
Tricky because Metal Gear 5, Metal Gear Solid 5, is two games.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
we're off, guys. We're off to a fucking great start with this.
This is great. This is like really entertaining.
What are we talking about today, I guess?
Today we're talking about Metal Gear Solid from 1998.
Came out on PlayStation.
Good year. Good year for games.
Yeah, came out on PlayStation. Here's my old man memories of Metal Gear. It was, of course, a very big departure from a lot of other NES games when the original Metal Gear launched. And that was, it was really hard. It was really hard to play. That's what I remember from being a kid. I also, my other exposure to this franchise is that I read the Worlds of Power book.
Fuck yeah.
Metal Gear by FX9.
Great book.
Which is a novelization that probably the novel, the American novel with most references to colored key cards would be Metal Gear by FX9 from the Worlds of Power franchise.
But that's... Still a rough transition to what we are talking about today.
But it's a long gap is the main thing I wanted to say. There's like a 12-year gap between, or 11-year gap between Metal Gear and Metal Gear Solid. The other thing I remember is reading in a magazine that Metal Gear Solid would feature Redbook audio. And I was so excited, even though I didn't know exactly what that meant, I was really excited about it having Redbook audio.
Is that like Red Shoe Diaries?
No, it's like digital, actual recorded audio versus like what you would get, the synthesized effect of cartridge game.
Got it. We should probably take a break and then we'll jump in.
Yeah, that was that. We've given you everything you need to know before the fold.
Yeah, but now we're turning the page to this commercial.
You shouldn't have to spend $1 million billion just to talk to your loved ones. But that's what these corporations want you to do, want you to have to do it. Because if we are not able to talk to each other, we're weaker and it's easier for them to take over. And I know that these are maybe some troubling thoughts, but Mint Mobile is here to help you out with that. Because for a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. It's time to, you can organize the rebellion easier talking to your friends and family for just $15 a month with Mint Mobile. To get this new customer offer, go to mintmobile.com/besties. That's mintmobile.com/besties. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Should we start with what was all our first time that we played this game?
Should we start with what Metal Gear Solid is?
Yeah, maybe that's even a better idea.
It's very simple. You are a 1980s action movie type of spy named Solid Snake, and you are being sent to Shadow Moses Island up in Alaska, and you need to stop a group of terrorists who are going to, I don't know, set off nuclear weapons, you think, unless they get their ransom, which is $1 billion and access to the body of Big Boss. Mm-hmm. And then you go about killing them all. And it turns out that, like, that's not actually exactly what they want and why they're there.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of other reasons. I think that's like it, right? Yeah, not bad.
Thank you.
This was the first game to have a sort of twist plot in it. Hideo Kojima was the first one to kind of do like a surprise in a video game.
The first ever surprise?
Yeah. Yeah, because you play it and you're like, I can't wait to get like the coolest gun, blow up the big bad guy. But then at the end, you find out that maybe like America. This is going to sound weird, but like maybe America's the bad guy? Anyway.
Come on.
Yeah.
But I can't pretend like I understand the intricacies of the plot of the Metal Gear franchise. That's actually not true. The first apartment I ever lived in, I lived with a dude named Jacob Dunkel, who was the world's biggest fucking Metal Gear fan, and I learned it was a masterclass in this franchise. It was when what was the PS3 one? Metal Gear Solid 4? Guns of the Patriots? Yes. Just a lot of buzz about that. I know everything there is to know. I'm an encyclopedia, thanks to my friend Jacob Dunkel.
Oh, good. You'll be useful here.
Yeah. Any questions you have, I can answer.
Okay, so now should we talk about how the game works, or do you want to go into personal?
I want to humanize it a little bit, because I feel like a lot of people listening may already at least know the outlines of this game, where you're a spy and you run through places. When was the first time you guys played this game?
We got it, I think, for Christmas at launch. Most of the video games we got in our household growing up were Christmas presents. Mm. Or like completely lopsided Babbage's trade-ins, where we gave up like every game we owned in order to get like Ocarina of Time. But this was, I believe, a Christmas drop in the McRoy household. And we probably were all playing it at roughly the same time at different save places.
And you played on PlayStation, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And
this followed a brief period of like video game indifference from us. Like, ooh. We had a Super NES, and we kind of fell out after that for a while. Like, we played N64, but it wasn't as much. And it was Final Fantasy VII being released on the PlayStation, where we're like, well, guys, we got to get a PlayStation. We got to do it. We used to get an official PlayStation magazine, and it would have a demo disc with a bunch of different games on it. I don't remember if Metal Gear was one of them, but I'm trying to put a pin in the time period.
Right.
This is what you come to this show for.
Right.
Invaluable historical recollection.
Vague recollection.
Honest to God, you talk about this game, you talk about this franchise, you talk about pretty much any Hideo Kojima game, and like the story is the long narrative weirdness of the games, right? Like that they are military fantasy, spy fantasy without editing.
Yeah, it's like if Tom Clancy took a bunch of mushrooms and then wrote a script, basically.
And then the editor was like, all right, I'll take a pass. And then Clancy was like, no, you won't. it's going to go out exactly like this. Which is like now in 2023, when video games have been doing narrative shit that has, you know, we've run the gamut, right? This medium has sort of technologically and narratively evolved a lot in the 25 years since Metal Gear Solid came out. But when Metal Gear Solid came out and had this like huge branching story with hours of cutscenes and, you know, hours of voiceover and all of this kind of like polish, it was like an event. It was a blockbuster in the truest sense of the word. And so it was tens across the board. And it was this hugely, hugely influential game, which is being there for that, I think, was necessary to kind of understand this game's place in the pantheon.
Yeah, because if you come at it now.
If you come at it now, holy shit. It's been a minute since I've sat down with Metal Gear Solid. I do want to say I played Twin Snakes, the GameCube version, which was a mistake. Yeah. Twin Snakes was the GameCube version that came out, God, I don't know how much later it came out. The GameCube was a full generation after the PlayStation, but it folds in some of
2004.
Okay, so 6 years after, it folds in some of the stuff that Metal Gear Solid 2 adds in. Like, there's you can
I think
do,
we're
like,
getting in the weeds
aiming.
A little bit.
Okay, maybe a little bit, but yeah, holy shit, this game is really, by today's standards, pretty far up its own butt. Pretty far up there, I think, even compared to, you know, a Death Stranding or a more modern Kojima jam. It's pretty deep in there, man.
Really? I thought the exact opposite.
Me too.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I thought it was like, you mentioned like no editing. It felt like, oh, this is before Kojima could truly just do whatever he wanted and everybody had to accept it. There's like an amount of restraint here. This like, I could follow the story, for one.
That is true. That's
and,
a rarity.
The perviness is like
it's bad.
Female character sways her tush, and he's like, "I noticed you because you have a butt."
Yes, it's like, a plot point.
It's a plot point.
Yeah, the butt is a plot point.
But if that were done in like Metal Gear Solid 5 period, that person would just be entirely naked, and it would be like they can't breathe unless their butt has air.
Yeah,
and most of her DNA is the Constitution.
Yeah, like there is there's restraint here that, yeah, I don't know. I found it very quaint, most of this game.
One thing that did jump out at me, obviously, graphically, it's been a long time since this game came out. But I did think, and I think having the rudimentary graphics kind of highlights this, you see almost immediately the difference between Kojima as a director and most other 3D games that have aged so poorly. Mm-hmm. Because Kojima, more than a lot of people who are making games at this time, knows where to put the camera. He knows, like, how to make camera movements that feel engaging.
Are we talking about the cutscenes or
in the cutscenes specifically? Yeah. I mean, I think that it
the opening, especially.
Yeah, the opening, all of it. Like, he's the camera angles are interesting, right? It's not just like a blank wall with characters standing in front of it. You get, like, a lot of different zooms and cuts that make it feel like more dynamic, considering how much chatting there is.
I was reading about his backstory a little bit just to refresh myself. And apparently when he was growing up, his parents would force him to watch a movie a night, regardless of like homework or anything. They would all have to sit and watch a movie. So he was essentially programmed from a very early age to be like fully obsessed with film, which tracks for his entire career, really.
Yeah, I really liked the limitations of this game. I'm curious how the later games are going to be for us, you know, revisiting them.
Yeah.
But it felt, because it's on PlayStation 1, because there just wasn't a whole lot he could do, that he couldn't go, like, full all out, I'm just making a movie. You know, he can frame the camera, he can do those things, but, like, scenes can't go on that long, because effectively, it's like watching a puppet show inspired by movies. But you are like these characters, you know, their faces don't move. They're just like human puppets.
I do wish I'd played the PlayStation 1 version because I actually really fucking love that vibe, that aesthetic. It looks so sick to me. And this just kind of looked like, you know, a shitty PlayStation 2 era facial animations. I want to say real quick, because I talked about how the lack of editing. I do think that you all are giving Kojima a lot of credit.
Me too.
Because I think that the reason that this game doesn't go, you know, as ham as, say, Metal Gear Solid 4 does with its hours-long cutscenes is just because of the technical limitations of the time.
Right.
If the hardware was stronger, my man would have gone even more bananas. I don't know how far everyone got into the game, but I remembered the almost 20-minute long monologue that Liquid Snake gives at the end of the game, where he kind of like, he doesn't even explain the plot. He like explains like a lot of minutiae about genome soldiers and all of that jazz. And I watched that cutscene this morning to really get in the right headspace. And y'all, it's fucking bananas. If you have never seen or played this game, just watch that 20-minute long bit where he talks about fucking how Gulf War Syndrome is actually an undercover operation to create super soldier babies.
Are you
babies.
Complaining right now, or are you praising?
God, I don't. It's not like anything else. It's not like anything. It's not like thing that I've seen. It's not good. It's not good writing, but it's like also not like anything I've ever seen.
It's
before
engaging
or after.
Writing.
I don't know sort about of. That even.
I found it engaging. I find it more engaging than like Metal Gear Solid 4. Right there are hills and valleys for Kojima stuff. Like
yes.
I mean, obviously, I like Death Stranding. I can sit through the Die Hardman monologues. I agree that it's like it's because of the restraints that this works better. But I also think that kind of almost is beside the point. Like, actually, let's talk about the restraints, because I think the irony here is the restraints make Kojima better as a director and make him worse as a game designer, because the game, holy moly, does not hold up in terms of a fun object. This isn't like Mario 64, where, you know, it both creates a genre and is like still good to today. This game's tough to eat.
Just to give a simple example, most of the game, for people that haven't played it, I'm sure there's a number of them because there really hasn't been a recent re-release of this game in ages. For people that haven't played it, most of the game is played from a top-down perspective. Your range of vision while you're running around top-down is about 10 feet. Yes. You will constantly throughout this game be firing off the screen at enemies you cannot see, even though you know they're there because of the radar, hoping to God that your shots land and kill them or take them out or whatever it is. And you'll use like the energy meter. And this was sort of alleviated in Twin Snakes, which Griffin, and actually I played more Twin Snakes than the PlayStation version, because you could first person aim and shoot people further on. But the game was not designed with that in mind. So the game essentially breaks if you abuse the first person aiming, which is to say there's a lot of things in this game that just do not, I mean, they make sense because of the technical limitations, but from a design standpoint, just have aged horribly and aren't very fun.
Not a joke. Every boss fight is bad. And I don't know how, except of course for fucking Psychomantis, which is like,
and that's we'll have a special reason.
We'll have a special breakout session to discuss Psychomantis.
We should, yeah.
But every boss fight is just like fire a rocket at this tank from...
I actually like the Vulcan Raven fight, for what it's worth.
That's the one where you have to steer the missiles.
No, it's the like one where he has like the giant minigun and you're like hiding behind the crates and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That one's pretty good.
It's mechanically pretty clumsy.
I will say, though, it's interesting what jumped out at me about the mechanic, which does feel, I mean, it feels, there's the key thing to me that feels bad about this game. The camera is probably number one, but close after. If you sneak up on somebody and you're like running up behind them, if you're holding the attack button, then you'll flip them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's like, so you have to get, but if you're still, you'll choke them out. So it's this game of like run up close to them and then let go at the exact right time to choke them. Because again, the guns are so disastrous to use that I typically go with the choking people out. But what I was going to say, it is interesting. I think that this game has so many different, like, it doesn't super get into, like, a repeatable rhythm.
Mm, that's true.
It's weird. Like, you know, they talk about, I forget which one of the Halo designers was, that it was like, you find your, like, 30-second loop of fun, with the thing that's fun, and then you repeat it. And this game, like, really doesn't get into a rhythm. And I mean that as a compliment, even though it's usually a negative, like... The things you're being asked to do from moment to moment are very different from, I mean, 1 second you're steering a missile through these hallways and then, you know, you have to find like a hole in the wall that you have to use C4 on to blow it up. And it doesn't explicit, like it hints around it, but it doesn't say like, I know it seems weird to you, but you're going to use first person camera to find a crack in the wall and then use C4 to blow it up. Like, but different stuff. Just moment to moment, like it's not a repeated loop. It is a specific situation.
Yeah, I wouldn't. It's not a series of mini games, but it almost feels that way, which makes sense. If you think about like a James Bond movie, like it's not going to be the same him running through a corridor shooting guys over and over again. It's going to be like, oh, I need to deal with this scenario and this scenario. And that's obviously what he was pulling from.
It's also very weird. It took me forever to get used to the idea that enemies can't hear you. You don't know how many times I rolled up on somebody.
You can do like the knock
a
track.
That's true. No, yeah, they can't hear you like walking on a steel, you know, catwalk above them. But they can
now
hear
the catwalks. Some of the catwalks do make
they
noise.
They do make noise. Actually, that's the example.
But most of them, like you can run right up behind a guard. It is just vision cones, and their vision cones are not impressive. That's not to say it's a cakewalk, because again, the camera's really working against you pretty much all the time.
Kojima is best when he's kind of getting a little silly with it, and this game has that a lot, like a lot. I think that pretty much every soldier that has dialogue in the game is like, oh, my diarrhea is so bad, I'm gonna die. Like, all of them, like, every one of them is like, oh, I farted on my porno mags. Like, all of them, every one
Wait,
of them.
Wait, you two are an otaku?
Right, and even though at the end of the thing, the fucking 20-minute Liquid Snake thing reveals that every soldier in the island is, like, technically your genetic clone, these soldier babies from fucking the Gulf War. And even though, like, you're cool and smoke and do flips and shoot rockets, and they're like, oh, man, this die-die, though, it's so bad. I live on the toilet. Psycho Mantis is the, I think, pinnacle of this, because it is just, it's a psychic villain who floats in the air. And he mind controls Meryl and tries to make her kill you, but then you're like, hey, cut that out. And he's like, okay, I'm going to talk to you for like 15 minutes. And he will, it's so fucking funny to have Solid Snake standing there, gun in his hand, while fucking Psycho Mantis floats 5 feet in front of him and is just like, I'm going to scan your memory card.
I'm going to talk about Luigi's Mansion.
You like Super Smash Brothers Melee. And it's, why does he do this thing? And then he's like, set your controller on the ground.
Oh, I love
and
that.
I will move it with my mind. And me, Griffin, age, you know, 11, is like, you're going to vibrate. This guy used a vibration. And I'm like, shoot him, Solid Snake. What are you doing? Shoot him to death. But instead, you're just going to stand there and watch him be like, you like The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, don't you? It's fucking hysterical and funny and great still to this day. Still the best shit ever. And it's my favorite Kojima stuff. And it's the only thing I want out of these games.
And I actually think, like, that becomes more common in later games.
Absolutely.
Where he gets just way sillier with his shit.
Low key, my favorite Metal Gear Solid game is 2, because it's bananas. It is completely ridiculous.
Okay.
And that's fun for me, the rest of my game.
I want to talk about Twin Snakes for a second, because I know Twin Snakes gets a bad rap, and Griffin already confirmed that, like, he would prefer to play it. And I do agree with Griffin. Yeah. The visuals of the PlayStation version are preferred.
Cool.
I like that aesthetic better. But yeah, the cutscenes in Twin Snakes, which were fully redone by a different director, not Kojima, they brought in a different director to do the cutscenes, are actually way closer to Kojima's later style than they were originally. Because there's like full-on butts. There's the scene when you first run into Meryl, and she's already knocked out a guard, and you're like confronting her because she's, you know, in disguise, whatever it is. Centered in the middle of that scene is a guard whose butt is in the air, and they like blur out his butt crack. But like, you do
and
not
butthole,
get that level.
Presumably,
that's in the
PS1. Yeah, but he's wearing underwear. I think he's not like
I believe it's blurred out.
Really, and it's a butt.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, regardless, there are a lot of, there's like a number, they added a bunch of like Otacon like falling down hills repeatedly, which I think
it's funny.
They added.
It's funny just hearing about it, man.
So I just think that I'm not necessarily saying it's better, but it is more consistent with like the physical humor of his later games. Yes.
The real Kojima game is the one Kojima never made.
Just another, while we're talking about the look and stuff, fun facts. Fun facts about Metal Gear Solid. The lead character, Snake, is actually a hybrid of three different famous actors. The voice, obviously, by David Hayter, is modeled on Kurt Russell's performance as Snake Plissken in the Escape movies, both of them. His body is modeled on that of Jean-Claude Van Damme in this one, and his face was modeled on, do we know this? Christopher Walken.
Oh, hey, what?
That is what the Wikipedia entry says, that the body's Jean-Claude.
I mean, the body.
Faced by Chris Walken.
The body feels like a reach, because, like, PlayStation graphics, what are you looking at? It's like 16 polygons. Is that really him?
I think it might be more his, like, stance.
I mean, I don't think
punches.
He modeled for it.
No,
I think they just looked at his butt and his body.
Let's put a bow on this. I didn't finish it. I think I may have actually made a swing at finishing it if I was playing original PS1 Metal Gear Solid. I really did not enjoy Twin Snakes. And if you are going to follow along in our footsteps, do play the original, not Twin Snakes. I really feel like that's...
Yeah, I agree with that.
That is the way to go. But it was I enjoyed the sort of weirdness that I remembered about this game. I really didn't like playing it, really at all. The playing of it had a bad hand feel. yeah. I would say, with all my time with it. And I don't know that that improves, right? I've never really known this franchise, except for 5, which gets,
it definitely, zany. Definitely improves, I would say, okay. To a lesser extent in 2. In 3, I think 3 holds up as like a modern game. Still,
especially the remastered
yeah subsistence version. Specifically subsistence, which fixes yeah. the camera.
I'm primed for a remake on this. I hope we get it.
It has been rumored, so it is possible. And Konami, you know, can essentially do whatever certainly. They want with it. So wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, and probably won't be through Konami. I believe. I think this is like a Sony partnership with Konami, and it would be coming from the studio that did Dark Souls.
Oh, wow.
Or, Demon Souls,
that's
sorry.
A big rumor.
That's the rumor.
Is that confirmed from Chris Plant?
No, not at all. That's like an ongoing rumor.
That would be insane.
Blue Point?
Very in favor.
Blue Point. Out of Austin, Texas. Before we wrap up this section. So, Metal Gear Solid 1, it's done. You probably did not get a chance to play it alongside us. That's for the better. If you're going to play Metal Gear Solid, play the Game Boy Color version. It's great. Kind
well,
of a separate
to
game,
be
though.
Clear, that is a completely different game. And
it,
story
yes, it is. But the point is, it's really, really hard to play this game. So a question that we were asked by Gray and Stam on Twitter, cutting a little bit of listener mail right here, is how would you play it? And the answer is, good luck. The easiest way to play this game legally is with the PlayStation Mini console, which you can still buy on Amazon or Best Buy, and it's included in that. Otherwise,
it sucks, right? Isn't the PlayStation Mini, like, not great?
I mean, I think, like, by, like, Digital Foundry standards, but I think for most people, you can play it and be like, hey, it's the game. But otherwise, like emulation or buying an original PlayStation and getting an original copy of the game. And if you're doing emulation, you should own a copy of the game anyway.
Is there no like PS1 classics on like the store?
There is a PS3 game called Metal Gear Solid Legacy Collection, and you could buy it there. I know.
Interesting.
And it was like a limited disc. For people who want to play Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3 coming up with us, because those are still a little more difficult. There is an HD collection that was available on PS3 and Xbox 360. You can also play Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2 on PC through Good Old Games.
For what it's worth, that's the first place that I played Metal Gear Solid 1 was on PC in like the year 2000. So.
Yes. Oh. And then Metal Gear Solid 3, you can weirdly play on the Nintendo 3DS.
Yeah,
that's
true.
But yeah, we'll keep you all posted. Metal Gear Solid 2 is coming up. It'll be, I'm sure, a little while.
And I can't convince you guys to do an episode on Ghost Babel, right? Because it genuinely is like one of my top 3 favorite Metal Gear Solid
games. I think Ghost Babel kicks ass.
Wait, Ghost Babel is the Game Boy Color one, right?
It's the Game Boy Color
one. Yeah, I will 100% do it. I love that game.
It is so fucking good that I think we
need to... What about Metal Gear Acid, the card-based...
No.
Oh, man.
No.
Deck builder.
No.
I think, how about this? Let's do Ghost Babel as a All of Us episode. Maybe we should bring our own special weirdo Metal Gear
game. Oh, yeah. We'll each pick our favorite
for a
separate spin-off.
Sure. Yeah, we can do that later in the year.
Yeah, I love that.
Okay. So we will give you warning when we're going to do the Ghost Babel episode. We'll probably give you a week's worth of warning. So just keep an ear out. It'll be a little while. Basically, when things are slow, we will do it.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now is the best possible time to create a website, a web page, a place on the web, whatever you want to call it. You need a home for your stuff. Maybe it's because you have a store, a business, and you want to be able to sell stuff online. That's great. Squarespace makes that easy. They have seamless checkout for customers, simple, powerful payment tools. They accept credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, whatever you want. You can upload video content if you're into that sort of thing. Maybe you like playing video games. Maybe you like to stream, collect an archive, throw it on a website. But frankly, I think everybody should just have a web space to be themselves. Do whatever you want. Maybe you want to post images of, I don't know, your family. You can share it with friends. Maybe you have art that you want to like be able to just keep. Maybe you just want a place to document your ideas. Remember blogs? You can just write things on the internet and nobody can tell you no. Definitely not Squarespace. In fact, they'll tell you yes. They will say, how can we help? Well, the answer is actually quite simple. You go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And you can use, the Squarespace Blueprint. It's a guided design system that'll make it all easy for you. When you go there, when you're ready to go and launch this thing, squarespace.com/besties, and that will save you 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. So get that free trial at Squarespace, squarespace.com/besties. We'll see you on the internet.
You like Castlevania, don't you?
It's a great read.
Great read. Perfect
read.
No notes.
But we're done talking about the Psycho Mantis. Did we even say the cool thing that you had to do?
Oh, where you switch your controller port?
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah, it was a really smart idea.
It was so cool. That freaked me out as a kid, man. But I probably read it in some magazine. We wanted to try something new with this TV segment where we're going to talk about The Last of Us. And we're going to have kind of like a point counterpoint.
Okay, fun.
Yeah. I thought this would be kind of cool. And so Chris and I really wanted to watch it, but we're coming at it from the perspective of like people who didn't want to watch it. You know what I mean? And then Griffin and Russ are coming at it from the perspective of people who are really, really excited to watch it.
That's interesting. See, I'm actually coming at it from a third perspective, which is that somebody who didn't want to watch it, but was told that they were going to discuss it on the podcast that they do.
That's also me.
Assuming that all that 100% of the members of that podcast would do the homework, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Now, Russ, you just said you didn't want to watch it. So if we have four people that didn't want to watch it, why did you choose?
But I watched it.
Wait. I did want to watch it. But I
so
didn't.
Four different positions. Didn't want to watch it, didn't want to watch it, didn't watch it, did want to watch it, did watch it, didn't want to watch it, did watch it.
We got our own little Punnett square of disinterest.
That's fine.
Okay, just to be really clear, I don't know if
let's get as clear as fucking possible.
I don't know if it's disinterest as much as whether I had a stomach to experience The Last of Us again, given the tonal darkness of the series.
Straight up. Let's do this thing. I'm not willing to pay the dead kid tax to watch a piece of media. If the film or television show is like, hey, I got a great story for you, really gripping, lots of drama and action and excitement, and the child does die pretty horrifically right in the very beginning, that is not.
And then they go ahead and toss in one more just for good measure.
Man, they do two back-to-back kid deaths in this film, in this TV pilot. We're coming at this, I think, pretty hot and heavy. I did actually think it was pretty good, and
I think it's extremely good.
I think it's extremely good. I think it's shockingly faithful. That's the thing that is like most surprising. Maybe the thing we can focus most on, because I think it would surprise anybody how at certain points, almost frame by frame,
pretty uncanny.
It is a recreation of the opening of The Last of Us.
A lot of this is A, going to have spoilers in it, and B, you know, might not make a ton of sense if you haven't played The Last of Us. But there are sequences like the intro sequence, the cold open, if you will, where you're essentially escaping from a, you know, mushroom zombie apocalypse. And
well, you're escaping from the opening moments. The way that the pilot sort of builds that tension of like something is terribly wrong, from like a radio report that you hear from Jakarta in the morning, and then in the afternoon it's like, oh man, Mrs. Henderson sure is acting weird, to like, you know, the almost one shot driving away from their house and, you know, getting stopped by traffic, and then the car explodes, and then they're running barefoot through the city. Like, all that shit works really, really well.
And was expanded. Like, that's a lot more than what was in the game. The game really just has like 10 minutes of like, it's nighttime and something's going wrong.
I think it really hit that opening sequence hard for me, because when I played The Last of Us originally, I was in Austin, and the game, you know, starts out in Austin, and there's like a point where you reach an intersection in the car in this like long one shot.
And are you running in front of the car? Is that you?
No, you're driving in the car, and you reach this intersection where it's like, well, I'm going to get on 71. And I remember seeing that shot in the game and being like, oh, wow, that's like, I know I kind of know where they're supposed to be right now. And that exact thing happens in the TV show. Anyway, really, 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 really faithful.
Yeah.
And I think that that is probably the most surprising thing about it, is that it adheres to the script and the scenario of the game, like, religiously.
You know what it makes me realize? I'm used to.
Does that make you realize the game itself?
That's what I was going to say. I think
the problem?
I think it did was highlight how much of a better movie and watching experience The Last of Us 1 is versus a gameplay experience, which is I actually think it's a fine gameplay experience. I don't think it's bad by any means, but narratively and the cutscenes and the performances are 100% the star of the show there. Yeah. And, you know, more or less, we're chopping out a lot of the, like, drier
puzzles
and the stealth sequence, like, all that stuff. And it's just the fucking prime beef of that series.
Yeah. Prime beef.
And so, I mean, that's pretty fucking good. And like, just, like, it's shot beautifully. The production's beautiful. The performances from Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey are, like, through the roof, insanely good and faithful to the game without being, like, I guess, beholden to the game. And I was just, like, pretty blown away by the effort. And with that said, I do not think that I can continue watching because it is just not the show that I have a stomach for right now. There are tons and tons of people that watch The Walking Dead and loved it. So I know that there is an audience for this show, especially for people that haven't played the games and don't know where it's going. But I just don't know that I am one of those people.
So I'm curious to watch a few episodes in a go. Having, like, talked with the team at Polygon who have watched it, it sounds like it's more episodic or standalone almost.
The individual episodes, you mean?
Yeah.
I would hope that the episodes would be episodic.
Well, so what I mean by that is, like, it's not serial. Like, it's not, it is not, hey, we're just going to continue on from where this first episode went, that, like, oh, now we meet these two characters and we get their very deep, beautiful story.
But that's in line with the game. The game was structured episodically as well.
That's true.
But it's smart, though, to that point, it allows you to trim some of those more mechanical segments. Like, there's not going to be a direct one-to-one, and it's smart if they're pulling segments out to allow themselves to, like, fast-forward past some of the more mechanical
And it lets you breathe. Like, what you're saying of, you know, is every episode going to be as dark as the beginning of the Last of Us 1 game? You know, getting different characters, different tones, somewhat different genres. Like, I just think it's a clever approach.
Yeah, I would say, like, I don't think it's a departure from the game, which also had, like, tonal, like, oh, this is a moment you could really breathe and take it in, and here's, like, a visual, like a really pretty landscape or whatever.
Yeah, Joel was just such an asshole. Their relationship was just, like, so tough, and just everything about him trying to convert his ward / like, human cargo, I don't know a good way of describing that, into his makeshift daughter. I don't know, that it's so dark. It's such a tough hang, even more than the zombies and the apocalypse.
You're talking about the game specifically?
In the game, and the idea of getting a break from that on the regular seems like a way for me to make it through this show. But I agree. I was listening to The Watch, which is this, like, a Ringer podcast about television that I love, and they made the point of, like, an up elevator versus a down elevator, that, you know, when you watch Station 11, that's an up elevator. Like, all the bad stuff has happened and now you're watching society get better. And Last of Us is a down elevator. Like, you're just at the beginning of the shit sandwich. And that makes perfect sense for what you're saying of the idea of getting on a down elevator right now seems tough.
Yeah, and we only know it's a down elevator because we've played the game. Like, I think most people would think, oh, the apocalypse happened, people made society, they figured things out more or less, and now it's sort of like dealing with that, but it just gets more and more fucked up as it goes.
And that's not like, this is why I feel really ill-equipped to talk about shows like this, in that, like, same thing with, like, Chernobyl, right, which has the same director.
Same showrunner. Craig Mazin, I believe.
Excellent. Amazing show. I watched the first episode and was like, I can't fucking like, this is a brutal watch. And I guess it just comes down to taste. like all things when you're consuming media, where like I can watch this and be simultaneously like really impressed with the adaptation, with the faithfulness of the adaptation, and with the quality of the production and acting and all of that, and also not want to watch it anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's a bad feel. It's a real bad feeling show, I think. And it's hard to... Honestly, we used to watch Walking Dead, too. And it was honestly around the pandemic, I think, when old COVID-19 first started to hit, that we were like, I don't actually want to watch a show that is such a bleak view of humanity at large in a time where that view is of, you know, not uncommon IRL. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take for me to get back on board with a zombie show, but this seems like a good one of them.
Did any of y'all watch Station 11?
No.
No.
Strongly recommend it, especially for anybody listening who is enjoying Last of Us. It is a fantastic TV show. Also about it's basically COVID, the TV show of airborne virus spreads and kills like 99% of the population. And then the people who are left have like kind of formed societies. And it's about a traveling theater troupe that is going from town to town to make money.
That sounds good.
Very, 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 very good.
Is it a movie or a TV show?
It's a TV show, but it's a one-off.
Not
so,
that you can really tell the difference these
days. Yeah, I think it's like, I don't know, 9 or 10 episodes, and that's it. There's no more of it.
So we got the email about how to play it, Metal Gear. here's a question from Sludge. An MGS movie has been in early development for years. Could a faithful film adaptation ever get made? What would have to change to make it work as a Hollywood blockbuster?
A faithful film adaptation could get made. It would get fucking ravaged by literally everyone. No one would come away happy. Even the
except
diehard
my
fans.
My old
of...
roommate Jacob Dunkel would eat that shit up.
Yeah, but he wouldn't be happy, because for the people that like want a literally faithful adaptation, they're never going to be happy with some small aspect that will spiral for them to the point where it ruins the entire project. And then for everyone else, they're going to be watching something that is almost unintelligible, I should say. So everything would need to change, really.
I don't think there's a good 2-hour, 2.5-hour, 3-hour even thing inside of any of the Metal Gear games.
The problem is this, right? Metal Gear is a bunch of basic, like standard, almost cliche spy and action movie tropes that have been implanted into Kojima's brain, and then he builds a bunch of weirdness to justify all of these like tropey action spy things. If you take away all the extraneous stuff and all the Kojima stuff and you get back to brass tacks, you're just left with something completely reductive. Like none of the original, quote unquote, original stuff is in the bones of the thing. It's all in like how he builds on top of them. So I feel like it would just be utterly generic once you chipped away everything that it required to get you back to a 2-hour long movie.
Also, this movie's happening, right? I mean, it's in like pre-production, but it's the furthest along it's ever been.
Does it have a direct, like any group?
Yeah, Jordan Vogt Roberts is the director who directed Kong Skull Island.
Oh, I like that movie.
Damn, that movie kicks ass, though.
You know what? Yeah. I kind of, that's a good director
it
pick.
It says
he is,
Oscar Isaac on here. Is that right?
Oscar Isaac is, Solid Snake.
Sure, why not? Sure, honestly, why not, it doesn't matter. You could literally put anyone in that role. It's fine. It's more about, I think, the direction, and also just like, are you willing to get fucking zany with it? And he's a
Which
good director.
He has said he wants to do. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's
that's
the right
his
fit
big
for
quote.
That. Kong Skull Island is a zany fucking movie.
Isaac has always had the vibe to me, and this is about my perception more than anything else, but he has always seemed to me to be like a quote unquote serious actor that's slumming it in drama stuff or in genre stuff. And I don't know how many things he has to do before I accept that, like, nah, he's just here. He has moved into genre territory, and he is just going to be the king of it.
I mean, he does both.
Right? Like, Star Wars and Marvel and now Solid Snake, I feel like I don't know. I feel like
I think
I don't feel as uncomfortable when I see him in genre stuff because he seems to enjoy doing it rather than a serious actor that's grabbing a paycheck for.
Yeah, I don't think he's grabbing a paycheck.
That's all I'm saying.
I agree with that. And I think it's just a matter of him being a big, big star. And any big, big star is going to have a lot of genre stuff on their resume these days.
Because it is. You mentioned Dune, of course.
The biggest.
Also, Dune.
Yeah. Fucking Dune. That movie rocked. Yeah, no, totally. I don't think the movie is going to get made, but if it does get made, I am encouraged by that director choice.
Yeah, okay, the movie is not getting made. Never mind. Oscar Isaac was talking about it in October of last year, and he was like, we want it to happen. What's the script? What's the story? What's the take? but hopefully it comes to fruition. It's my favorite. So...
It make more sense as a TV show, right? I mean, right?
If anything,
I think this shit is unadaptable, gang.
It would be cool as hell as an anime.
An anime would be cool.
There we go. What if they did a video game? Okay.
we got a question from JSKFM real quick. What the fuck is the deal with Kojima and character names? And this game certainly has a lot of wild character names, but when I was doing research for this episode, I was reading about the plot of Metal Gear 2 Solid Snake, which came out before this game, which had, I think, the best character names in any Kojima project. Just to run through a few of them. Running Man, pretty typical. Red Blaster. Ultra Box, one of the enemies. Jungle Evil. Good. Night Sight, which was later changed to Night Fright in later versions. it's fucking great. He's great at character names.
What's funny is that, like, okay, that game came out in what, 90, like maybe 1990, like in that NES era.
Yeah.
Where, like,
90.
Games could have enemies named that, and it wasn't that weird.
Yeah, like, they're like Mega Man enemy names.
They were like Mega Man enemy names, right? But then to also use that in fucking Death Stranding a million years later is like, you're still doing that shit, huh? That's cool. That's great.
Some of them are references, like Hal Emmerich is obviously like Roland Emmerich, the director, and probably Hal the computer from 2000, I would guess, you know.
What about Night Fright? Like,
Night Fright is tougher. Some of it is probably stuff that sounded cooler in Japanese.
Yeah, for sure.
And then once you translate, it's like, I don't know, it doesn't seem that cool to me, but I'm not a native English speaker, so I just got to roll with it.
I mean, I like it as somebody who has trouble remembering names.
Exactly.
You know, I'm never going to forget Die Hardman. I know exactly who Die Hardman is. Also, do you know Die Hardman's real name in Death Stranding?
Hi, Dardman.
John McClane.
That's great. That's kind of like the diehard guy. Not quite a question, but would love to hear the besties discuss any other games that use/reference their physical copy, like how MGS uses the game case to find the codec code. Now, if you don't remember this time period, I mean, it's copy protection, right? Like, that's what the CD case thing is.
Yeah, but in the case of MGS, I don't think it was copy protection.
I don't think that's what it was. Yeah. In Metal Gear Solid, if you don't know, there was one bit where the only way for you to know the, like, correct frequency to punch into your codec was that it was featured on a screenshot on the back of the game case.
Yeah.
Which is fun, which is great. But there was DRM, very, very, like, proto-DRM, especially in, like, the old PC, like, adventure game days. I remember the Quest for Glory games had some of this. A lot of those, like, old classic adventure games had it, where, like, I think it was Quest for Glory 4 had a alchemical... like, book of formulas in the manual that if you did not have that, you could not solve one of the necessary puzzles to progress in the game. You couldn't just, like, rip a disc and then have the game without that manual or else, like, you could not proceed. That shit was not super uncommon for games of that era and genre. Didn't Monkey Island have something like that, too?
Star Tropics had a page in the instruction manual where it would reveal a code that you needed to beat the game.
So great.
And I know that there was a Monty Python game where there was a cheese wheel, and it was like a code wheel that you had to turn with the coordinates they gave you at the beginning of it to figure out what kind of cheese they were referencing. And that was how you would start the game. So they had to prove that you had a valid copy of it. Hilariously, by the way, that Star Tropics, there was a Switch Online version of Star Tropics.
Oh, no.
And yeah, and it they just kind of put it out. And then people got to that part, I guess, and they were like, hey.
I mean, the internet exists. It's fine.
Well, yeah, right. You could, if you downloaded it, you have access to the internet. But it is funny that I guess it was a fix in a Wii U version that was released.
Oh, they changed it?
In the Virtual Console. But the release they did for the online version.
One of your favorite games of last year did this. Tunic. The whole gimmick of Tunic.
I mean, it's referencing
that's in
that.
The game.
I mean, right. I mean, it's in the game, but it is like they found the modern way to do it.
I thought of Tunic because they sent a PR package to me, and it had like things tied to the game in like really subtle ways. So it reminded me of that. But yeah, I think it's a little different how Tunic does it in game.
Computer games used to come with, this isn't exactly the same thing, but it is fun to talk about it. A lot of PC games used to come with what were called feelies, and they would be like little props, not unlike, I guess, what people do with limited edition stuff these days, where you get, you know, a prop from the game. But like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy comes with like some glasses. There was cool stuff with like Detective Game that would have a bunch of like clues in there that you could
of cloth maps with a lot of like PC RPGs.
Ultima would come with a lot of this stuff.
I hate the name feelies. I couldn't hate it more. It's like bad. Reverberating in my brain, feelies.
No, it's bad. I get you. It's bad.
We've been playing anything else? Is it that time?
It is that time.
I want to give a special shout out. We've been streaming now a couple times Sea of Thieves. That game's fucking fun now. I don't know if you guys know or have kept up with it.
They made it fun.
There's a lot of stuff in the game now and a lot of things to do, and it's very fun to play. I was playing by myself yesterday. I'm not ashamed to admit. I hopped on a sloop and was like, I want to see what these sea forts are all about. Went and cleared out a sea fort, got some money. The way that they've sort of like changed progression and your like ability to captain your own permanent ship, like all that shit's really cool. And it's got me playing the game, trying to earn enough money to buy a ship for our next stream. I really have been enjoying our time with that game.
Fantastic.
I was mostly playing Metal Gear, so I don't have a lot new to talk about, and I watched our homework. So what do you want from me?
I started, I watched several episodes at this point, a show called Industry.
Oh.
It's on HBO Max. What's what?
No, I've seen it.
Why'd you laugh at me?
No, it's funny. I like that show, but it's funny.
It's funny. It's sort of like a, you know what? Here's the best pitch I can give. Like Grey's Anatomy crosses Succession. Like if that's like your, if that sounds like your kind of thing.
You know what it reminded me of? Was MTV's Skins with bankers. Do you remember that show, MTV Skins?
Just a bunch of sexy bankers,
essentially.
I guess is what this show is basically, a bunch of sexy bankers that are trying to make money and climb the ladder in that world. There's a lot of hijinks that goes hand in hand with that.
There's a lot of jargon in that show. I like
a lot of jargon.
Really have a tough time keeping up with all the jargon.
You were, but you've been on CNBC.
I know.
How's that possible?
I know. It seems unlikely.
It's no worse than medical shows. I mean, you get what's happening. You understand when things are bad and when things are good.
Yeah, that's all that
which
matters.
I think is about all you need to know. I obviously comprehended all of it, but it's good. It's good. We're going to keep watching it. And the new episode of Paul T. Goldman is absolutely
the most
wild.
And
if you're not
shit.
Watching that show, there's also, this is not a, this is a warning. This is not a review because I haven't watched it yet, but I'm about to go ham on it. Have you guys seen this show called Traitors?
No, I've heard it's very good.
There's a show on Peacock.
Yeah.
It's called Traitors. It's a reality murder mystery show hosted by Alan Cumming in a big mansion. And there's a lot of treachery and murder. And it looks outrageously good. It's got some reality show people, some favorites that I've seen in reality shows before. And I mean, I haven't watched a single episode of it, but I can give it my stamp of 100%
approval. Is it going to be like the fucking, I think Fox did Whodunit, which was a murder mystery.
ABC and it whipped ass.
It was a murder mystery reality competition show where at the end of each episode, the player who got eliminated was murdered and then was the murder that they had to solve for the next episode.
Yeah.
What a classic. If it's anything like that, I'll watch every episode of it.
I have one. Have y'all ever heard about The Shout?
No.
Okay. So there's this movie from like 1978 called The Shout. And it is about a man who meets Tim Curry at a like mental institution, right? And they're watching a game of cricket. They're keeping score. He's like, I have to tell you a story. And the story is about himself going to a small town and revealing that he has the power of the shout, where he shouts so loud, everyone dies.
Mm. Cool.
And then the whole movie is building towards, will he or will he not shout? And let me tell you, it rules. It's a great movie. Tim Curry is very delightful in it. I cannot recommend it enough. It's on, I think it's on Criterion. It's on a few places. It's one of those movies that I can't imagine like people have to pay big licensing fees for it. But it's great.
I want to give a shout out. GDQ, or I guess AGDQ, the Wintertime event, was last week. And it was a great event. They're still doing it remotely. I can't wait for it to, I don't know if it'll ever.
It's Awesome Games sort of Done Quick for people.
Awesome Games Done Quick. It's a speed running marathon for charity. Still kicks ass, even though they're not doing it sort of live in person. I miss that energy a lot, but I get obviously why they're not doing it that. Anyway, as I expected, the neon white speed run for GDQ this year is fucking radical. I don't have the name of the runner on hand, but it was really cool, really informative about like all the tech that goes into speed running that game. It's just a level, like level by level speed run. They don't do the cutscenes and all that shit. You'll be glad to hear, I'm sure. But it is breathtaking if you played that game and, you know, endeavored to ace every level. Watching somebody just fucking dissect it in that way is really, really good. It's my biggest recommended watch of the whole event.
Looks like Bladen and Tordana were the speedrunners in that. Thank you to everyone for listening to the show, and specifically for the people that took the time to write reviews for the Besties on Apple Podcasts, specifically to Diana, Faye17, Todrick, and BigB135. Thank you for writing reviews. Thank you to everyone else.
The games that we talked about this week included Metal Gear Solid 1, The Last of Us, and The Last of Us TV show, The Shout, Industry, Paul T. Goldman, Traitors, Sea of Thieves, Awesome Games Done Quick.
Next week, we are doing Fire Emblem Engage, the newest entry in the long-running turn-based strategy series, Fire Emblem.
It's good. I've heard it's good.
I'm excited.
Me too.
Cool.
But I'll have to wait to talk about it and play it because
we don't have it
that's
yet.
We don't have it, and that's all the time we have. So we have to stop now. And that's just podcasting, folks. I'm sorry. But we hope you join us again next time for the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties!